1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
A little more email to read tonight, and our web address again, our web address, www.philhendryshow.com, and for email, phs@philhendryshow.com. Lloyd, go ahead. Is the gentleman there?
Mr. Hendry, I wanted to speak with you about a program that you aired recently. You were mentioning the restroom at your office, if you recall that.
I was mentioning the men's facility here as being not very well kept. Yes, sir.
I wanted to take a little bit of exception with you, if you don't mind, sir. You mentioned the habit that some men have of not hitting the urinal directly, but it going on the floor and so forth. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're aware that many of those urinals in many of these facilities are placed rather low.
Well, I never really noticed. I don't have a problem aiming and hitting, and I don't know why some guys do.
Well, I think that your reference to some guys having a problem and others not is a little offensive to your listeners. I found it offensive. And
why?
Well, you see, if the urinal is low and you have a hard time hitting it, it obviously means it takes a long time to get from where it originated to where it's going, correct?
I don't follow you.
Well, I think you do follow me. You're bragging that it doesn't take a long time. In other words, you got one that, you know, it gets there pretty fast. Is that what you're trying to say? You're talking about how you got one that is like a fire hose and the rest of us. It got one like a thumb. And so you got to take some time to aim it. Because you are talking about a very long way to go before it...
Okay, I had no idea that was even in... That had nothing to do with what I was saying.
Well, you're inferring, sir, and you may be right or you may be wrong. But if you... sometimes you need to take a look, see where it's going to go, and hope like hell the wind... And if the wind factor is against you...
The wind? In a bathroom? How small are you?
See, there you go, right there. See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You don't have to take the wind into... you don't have to take the wind into consideration, do you?
Sir, I never take the wind into consideration when I'm standing in a men's room and I'm using the facility, no.
Well, some of us do. So I guess that means I've got one like someone's thumb. Oh, boy, you are a child, aren't you?
You know what? I will honestly say to you that it never occurred to me.
It never occurred to you. I don't believe it. For a moment, I've listened to your broadcast, and I'm well aware of many of your broadcasts. And I've been on the Don Barrett website, where they have a great many things to say about you. But I'm speaking on behalf of men who do have to go into the men's room using some kind of a wind gauge. And, of course, if some of us are concave, like me, I'll...
All right, see you later. Concave? Yeah, that's right, Phil. Some of us, when we go into the men's room, we have to take the wind into consideration because it's a long way down, man. Thank you very much for that. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show. All right, let me see if there's any more email that's worth reading here. Josh writes, quick question from a longtime fan from WIOD in Miami. I was wondering why RC has aged. Your character RC, I think he's the only character that has substantially changed while still keeping the name and the backstory. What gives? Keep up the good work, and great show as always, Mr. Hendry. I thought that it would be funnier to have him go from being a goth, Satan-worshipping teen to, you know, because he lived with his mother, and she was a drunk and a floozy. And I thought it would be cool that his father comes swooping into the scene and takes RC and deposits him in a military academy and goes back up to the factory that he owns. So the kid's abandoned in both ways. So on the one hand, he's sitting there worshiping Satan, and he's sacrificing barbecued chickens in the railroad tunnel in Chatsworth. And on the other hand, he's sitting there at the Bradley Military Academy kissing the gunner's daughter. Phil, I'm a Backstage Pass member, and I love the show more than my own family. I think you guys have it out for your gay listeners, though, and here's why. You've got a shirt for chicks in your shop that says, I love Phil. It's got a little heart there. This design, however, is only offered on one of those little girly baby doll t-shirts. What's the matter? You don't want guys going around with I love Phil written across their chests? Worried people might think the person wearing that shirt's gay? Yeah, well, guess what, pal? I'm gay. Now what do you think? Josh. Okay. And here is a news story. I just got this. Lou Rawls has died. Lou Rawls was a singer who sang some tunes, really, but he was a good friend of Sam Cooke's, and the dude sang a lot of really sexy love songs during the 60s and 70s, and I, for a long time, I thought the guy did a Michelob beer commercial, and then I realized that it was that Let It Be Low. No, it was a Löwenbräu commercial. He is the good friend. I thought that was Lou Rawls, and then some guy calls me up, and he says it's Arthur Prysock, and I said, okay, I gotta leave. I'm way out of my league on this one. All right, remember Julia Roberts? It's been a while, hasn't it? The actress has been out of the public's eye pretty much since before giving birth to her twins more than a year ago. Roberts is making her first public appearance on Monday night. She'll be at the Broadcast Film Critic Association's Critic Choice Awards. She'll be presenting a special award to her pal, George Clooney. Other awards for the best in movies for 2005 will be presented for the best picture, actor, actress, and so on. Plus, there'll be a special honor for King Kong. The Critics' Choice Awards will air live Monday night on the WB and E. So they're getting some big play. And they're doing a live red carpet arrival show an hour before the awards begin. You know, it's really interesting how many of these awards banquets and ceremonies I guess they're trying to replicate the old days of Hollywood, like when there really was such a thing as a red carpet, and that you really got on a red carpet, and there were fans screaming in adoration. And now you do one of these red carpet things, there's three guys there, you know, or you'll do a press conference for a TV show, like they used to do press conferences for movies. There'd be thousands of clicking cameras and rolling cameras and everything. They'll do a press conference, there's two guys there. Oh, the press conference was successful. And they're replicating sort of the feel of what it was to have a press conference where people actually cared, or an award ceremony that people actually cared about, right? Like, for instance, the Screen Actors Guild, they have an award ceremony. They give out awards. Now, never mind that 95% of the members of the Screen Actors Guild don't make 5 cents an hour. You know, what's that got to do with anything? Let's have an award ceremony. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild. All right. And Wayne, aren't you in SAG? Okay. And I'm supposed to get all hot and bothered and excited because they're going to give out an award to who? Brad Pitt. Hey, all right. He made another $30 million this year. How about giving me an award? How about, I think the Screen Actors Guild ought to give out an award to the guy that made the least amount of money in 2005. The cat that could barely pay his insurance. How about this? And this year's Screen Actors Guild Award goes to Irving Farquhar. He made $45, and he still kept his family insured, no thanks to us. All right. That's a great one. He did a couple of bit parts. He was the voice of a kangaroo on an Andy Richter. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about Phil Hendry. And let's see. One other thing. I mentioned the gay kiss in the pool. Here's another thing about this Brokeback Mountain. You know, it ain't that we deal with a lot of gay issues on this show, or even that Doug Danger is a gay man and a gay journalist, but when you just open up your newspaper, Brokeback Mountain is a movie that apparently has some gay cowboy issue, but no one's going to see it, so what's everybody getting all bent out of shape for? And Glad wanted an apology from that guy with the big mustache on the Today Show, because he said that Brokeback Mountain blew a mule, and they were really upset because they thought it was really cool because it deals with gay issues, right? I said, and I'm still saying it, every year, GLAAD gives out an award to motion pictures and television for the best gay character. They gave it to the guy that plays that swishing character on Will and Grace. Like, that's what? That's a good gay character? I don't get that, man. It's like United Negro College Fund giving an award to the best representation of an African-American in television and radio. Step and fetch it. Yeah! Very nice.
Well, I want to say, I hate ghosts.
Yeah, that's Step and Fetch It is. So I say that we nominate this year for the GLAAD Best Gay Character Award, Doug Danger, played by yours truly. And I'd like to get that award, and I want it to be presented to me at a red carpet ceremony right in front of the GLAAD headquarters with some chick standing there with keys hooked to her belt in a flannel shirt and another girl with one of those Mary Astor haircuts and the softball shorts. And they go,
and here's your award.
Thank you, girls. And I say, accept this on behalf of Doug Danger, a gay man and a gay journalist. And then they kick me in the ass and throw me out. I think it'd be great. All right, but what do I know? I'm just Phil Hendry, a guy that doesn't have to aim that far. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
So anyway, I was talking about these plays, and I don't even call them, I don't want to call them the wackiest moments in professional football history, because that brings to mind a blooper reel, and I don't like those movies anymore. I don't want to see them anymore. NFL Total Access, fortunately, it's good channel, and they avoid that kind of highlight reel. I've seen all of the guys getting hit in the nuts that I want to see. I've seen all the guys running into a goalpost.
Isn't that great?
They never tell you whether the guy went out with a broken neck or not. It's like if NASCAR's wackiest moments as a car's going end over end down the straightaway right into the grandstand and bursts into flames. Isn't that something else? Oh, look at that guy there, man. He's just running in flames from the pit. I think the guy, well, I don't know if he's on fire or not. It must be some of that high-octane fuel that you can't see burn. Do you ever, speaking of that, do you ever watch the Indy 500 when Rick Mears caught on fire and no one knew that he was on fire? Did you ever see that? Oh, my God. I'm watching the Indy 500 and suddenly there's Mears and he's jumping up and down. And a guy finally takes the fire extinguisher and hits him with it and you can't see what's going on because these flames are invisible. It's some sort, I don't know, it's some kind of a NASA rocket fuel that they use in those cars. It's real different, man. It's real mysterious. All right, so we mentioned the play that got Newman out of his mind, and that was the fake spike play. Then we remember Leon Lett, and this was during a Thanksgiving Day game in 1993. Leon Lett played for the Dallas Cowboys, and Miami Dolphins were playing the Dallas Cowboys there in Texas, Thanksgiving Day, 1993. Let's see, where was I? I was in Atlanta. And anyway, remember the kicker Pete Stoyanovich? He kicked for the Dolphins. He's attempting a 41-yard game-winning field goal with seconds left. The kick is blocked. The kick is blocked. Then the ball spins toward the end zone, and all the players avoid the ball because it's blocked, and that's all you got to do, right? Just block it. Game's over. But Leon Lett, who's a defensive tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, he jumps on it. He slips on the snow. It makes it a live ball now. Once it was blocked, it's blocked. You don't touch it. The Dolphins can't touch it because that's their last down. So it'd be a, dead ball. But they blocked the kick, and Leon Lett, he went after the football, and it slipped out of his grasp. Now the ball is live. Now anybody can grab it. The Dolphins recovered the ball at the 2. Stoyanovich kicks a 20-yard field goal, and Miami wins. Now, everybody after the game said that Leon Lett was a big, dumb clod of a freak. Some big, dumb lineman, right? Big, stupid defensive lineman. But what they don't realize is...
He's black?
He's black. I didn't mean he's black. Shut up. He's a guy that's trained to go after live balls. Get out of here, bud.
I'm only kidding.
Get out. He's a guy that's trained to go after a live ball.
I'll bet he's trained to go after a live ball.
Leon Lett jumped on the ball, and it slipped out, and the Dolphins grabbed it, and that's that. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Let's go over to Bobby. Bobby, hi, you're on the air. Bobby, go ahead, you're on the air. Bobby, you're on... Why isn't you on the air?
I just had it turned down for fun. Here she is.
And I was going to say to that...
Hold on for a minute, man. Why'd you do that?
We're just having fun.
Feel empowered because Hall's backing you up, huh?
Hello?
Hold on for a minute. Feel empowered because Hall's backing you up?
I don't feel empowered, but after Harmon, you mess up.
Hello?
Hold on for a minute, ma'am. I'm saying to you, let me run the show, and when I say a call goes on the air, I want the knob up. I don't want you with the knob down, okay?
See?
Yeah, see? Go ahead, Bobby.
Yes, Phil, I wanted to welcome all of your listeners to our Wintertacular, and it is going to be at the Western Estates Homeowners Association on January the 13th, and we are inviting everyone to purchase tickets here at our Western Estates Homeowners Association.
And now, the Wintertacular is what, ma'am?
Well, this is part of four celebrations that we have at Western Estates. We have the Falltacular, we have the... Oh, God, Steve, that is really rude.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
I'm sorry?
Nothing. We have... Phil, I have to call... Hold on for a minute.
Well, ma'am, I got other things I have to do.
You want to light a match? It's my husband. Phil, we have our Wintertacular in the January. We have our Springtacular in March. We have our Summertacular in July, and then we have our Falltacular in autumn.
Okay, now where can people get those tickets?
All right, you can get the... Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, Phil, you can get the tickets here at Western Estates. Oh, come on. You can get the tickets here at Western Estates at our Homeowners Association office.
All right, and what is the address?
All right, we're located on Ventura Boulevard. Really, our... Oh, for God's...
Russell Sprouts.
We'll open a window. See?
Okay.
Hey, pull my finger.
Shut up.
Ma'am?
Yes, that's all right. My husband is...
I understand, but I got to get going.
So we have a Western Estates Homeowners Association office on Ventura Boulevard. You can also come to Western Estates, and we are located on Topanga Canyon Boulevard in Western Estates, California.
Hey, pull my finger again.
Please, Phil. I'm awfully sorry, Phil. Please. And if you want, you can come to one of several areas where we're going to be auditioning for our fashion show, and one will be in the Western Estates Plaza, and that will be coming up this Saturday. But we wanted everyone to... Oh, my God.
What, can I ask you a question? What's going on?
You know what? I'm sorry, Phil. I wanted to just let your listeners know. I'll deal with it. I want to let your... Hold on. I want to let your listeners know. Shoot.
What's going on?
I'm just trying to light a match. I want to let your listeners know that they're welcome. I'm sorry, Phil. I apologize so very much. Jeez.
All right, we'll be right back.
The match lit.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Anyway, getting back to this list now. Jack Patera, one of the wackier coaches in the National Football League, called a fake field goal in a football game in 1979 between the Seahawks and the Falcons. Patera coached the Seahawks. He calls a fake field goal. Jim Zorn was the quarterback at that time for Seattle. He takes the snap. Efren Herrera, remember that name? Efren Herrera was the Dallas field goal kicker for years. So there's a fake field goal, but then I think he's playing for the Seahawks when this happens. So he calls a fake field goal. Efren Herrera runs up the middle and makes a catch for a 20-yard gain. The best way I know how to explain the play is to ask you to imagine a 4'6" Hispanic penguin waddling up the field to catch a ball between its flippers. That's what some guy reviewed the play as. So he says that, and anyway, the Seahawks beat the Falcons. Efren Herrera, big deal. Then there's the snowplow. There's the comeback, which is that big game where the Oilers, you know, blew that lead. Then they got that whole thing with the hook and ladder and that San Diego Miami game, and that was before Marino. They had 1,036 yards of total offense by both San Diego and Miami in that game, 809 yards passing, and Marino wasn't playing. It was Dan Fouts and David Wooden. Kellen Winslow, who few people remember Kellen Winslow. I really honestly wonder how many modern football fans know the name, but he was every bit as good a tight end as any that's ever played, and he had an unbelievable game. Final score in a game, it was a field goal in overtime for a San Diego win, 41-38. Oh, I know what it was. David Wooden. It was Don Strock. Don Strock was a backup quarterback for the Dolphins. Don Strock comes into this football game. The guy came from VPI, Virginia Tech, and he had been the backup for the Dolphins for years, man. He sat on the bench behind Greasy, sat on a bench behind Wooden, sat on a bench for a while behind Marino. And Don Strock comes in and goes toe to toe with Dan Fouts. And these dudes put up 1,038 total offense, 809 passing yards between them.
What's that make?
I don't know. 400 apiece, I guess. Oh, my God. Divide it by two. Then they got, of course, the Super Bowl in which the Titans, trailing 23-16 with 10 seconds remaining in the game, they got one final shot to beat the Rams. Steve McNair passes to Kevin Dyson, who's tackled at the one-yard line. No time left. Game over. Thank you. As he's reaching for the goal line, straining for the goal line, and memories of Houston. Then there's the so-called tuck play where Brady was tucking it in, and so it wasn't a fumble. It was an incomplete pass, and that was in the playoffs in 2002, and the Raiders were bent out of shape because they thought they should have won that game, and they should have gone on to play in the Super Bowl, and yeah, I'll bet that would have been a real exciting game. They would have got their ass handed to them by the Rams. Instead, the Patriots go, and oh, you know what? Gee, it was only the greatest Super Bowl I've seen ever. That was better than a Titan game. I don't give a crap what anybody says. That Patriot-Ram game in 2002 was the best Super Bowl I've ever seen. And I've seen them all. I've seen them all. Yes, I've seen them all. In 1967, I was 14 years old. I was sitting there on the roof of my house, fooling with an antenna, trying to pick up the signal from San Diego because it was blacked out in L.A. Green Bay 35, Kansas City 10. In 1968, I sat in our living room, able to watch the Super Bowl because they didn't black it out in L.A. Why? It was in New Orleans. I sat and watched painfully as Oakland got their rear end handed to them by the Green Bay Packers, 33-14. And then came Super Bowl III. I was there in the living room of an apartment I shared with my father and my sister. By then, my parents divorced. We were poor. We had a bedroom that we shared, my sister and I. My father chose to sleep alone. She was 16. I was 17. It was fun. And I watched as Joe Willie Namath put it to the Baltimore Colts. The Colts turned the ball over five times. Jets 16. Colts, you blow. In 1970, it was the Kansas City Chiefs against the Minnesota Vikings. Super Bowl III was a fluke. The AFL will get their rear end handed to them this year. Oh, really? Well, guess not. Kansas City 23, Minnesota 7. In 1971, the worst Super Bowl I've ever witnessed in my life. The sloppiest, most rotten football game in Super Bowl history. Why? Because the people, the geniuses that ran the Orange Bowl, decided it's 150 degrees, let's put in AstroTurf. It melts before the game starts. That means the guys that are wearing cleats, they might as well have them on ice. The game had 9 million turnovers. Everybody sucked. The most valuable player in the game was a member of the losing team. The losing team being the Cowboys, the winning team being the Baltimore Colts. 1972 saw the Miami Dolphins make their very first Super Bowl. Where was I? Sitting on the floor of my friend's apartment watching it. His girlfriend and him are making out. And I'm sitting there feeling so lonely and looking down at my fly and, you know, just not even interested in football. Anyway, Miami won that game. Larry Zonka fumbled for the very first time that season in the Super Bowl. Miami got their ass kicked by Dallas. 1973 was a whole different story, baby. The Dolphins went undefeated that year. And I watched that game alone again in my apartment in Orlando, Florida. I just moved there. And guess what? I was stuck with the lease by my two friends who got into my friend's Opel Kadett and went back to California and said, gee, thanks a lot, Phil, for letting us crash here. And I'm stuck with the freaking month's rent. And a six-month lease as I watched that year the Dolphins defeat the Washington Redskins at the Coliseum. I also was sitting in that apartment when Franco Harris caught the ball off of his shoe tops in the Immaculate Reception game, sitting in an apartment that I had to pay for all by myself. Bell, you suck. You know who you are. In 1974, it was the Miami Dolphins defeating the Minnesota Vikings in a horrible Super Bowl played in Houston, Texas at Rice Stadium. Oh, whoopee. I remember I just busted up with this chick, and I went over to my friend's house, and his wife and him invited me over, and I'm sitting there, and I'm sucking on a bottle of beer, and we couldn't really enjoy the game because his wife kept wanting to go someplace, and we're trying to tell her it's a football game, and it was sad. It was oh so sad. 1975, I was working that day. I had to be on the air at WBJW, BJ 105. I'm not kidding. That was the name of the station, and they said it with a straight face. I was working, so I had to split, but I did see the game, and I believe it was the very first Pittsburgh win over Minnesota, and my friend was there from Pittsburgh. The guy was a Vietnam veteran from eastern Pennsylvania, a guy named Roy, and he was just sitting there saying, "Hey, Phil, this game is really good. Still good." You know, he was swallowing his L's. It was sad. Then came 1976. 1976 was the year that the Pittsburgh Steelers won again, this time over the Dallas Cowboys. I don't remember seeing any of that game because, again, I was working on the weekend, but I do remember coming back toward the end of the game. Oh, no, wait a minute. Was it 76 or 77? It was 76. No, it was 76, yeah. It was the Steelers and I forget. Now we come to 1977. At the time, I was dating this girl who was a director at a TV station locally in Orlando. I said to her, "Well, I got to be on the air, but I really wanted to watch the game." She says, "Don't worry, we're taping it." It was 1977, so taping a game was completely new to the consumer. Sure, TV stations could do it, but she worked at one. She said, "I'll tape the game, and you can come and watch it here at the TV station when you get off the air." I said, "Baby, no wonder I dig you. And the fact that you have really, really big breasts. That and this ball game, I'll marry you." I get off the air. I kept myself completely insulated. I wouldn't let the dude tell me, you know, the guy that relieved me on the air. He comes and goes, "Man, did you see the guy?" I said, "Shut up. I'm going to go watch it." I get in my car. I drove over to the TV station. My girlfriend comes into this, like, conference room they have there. She rewinds the tape, and what she got it queued up to? The final score. Oakland handed Minnesota their rear end. It was a lousy game for Minnesota, but a good game for the Raiders. 1978, I was sitting in the living room with some cats that were like dried out drunks, some guys that I was working with, some charity I was working with, a radio station. So all these guys were alcoholics, and it was like Skid Row, and we were watching Dallas and Denver, and Dallas won the football game. Craig Morton, I remember, was the quarterback for Denver, and the game sucked. Denver shouldn't even have been in the Orange Crush my ass. 1979, it was another Pittsburgh-Dallas Super Bowl, and while many people look at the Pittsburgh-Dallas series as being exciting, I found it ever so dull. But this was a great game. It was the game that Jackie Smith dropped that sure touchdown pass in the end zone, one of the best tight ends in the game. Staubach hit him between the letters, and he drops it. Pittsburgh win again. We'll be back with more Super Bowl memories and girlfriends that I'd rather strangle than see again here on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back, 1-800-449-8686.
And now we return to Phil knows exactly where he was for every single Super Bowl ever played. The 80s. Ah, yes, the 80s. The 1980s kicked off with the L.A. Rams and the Pittsburgh Steelers. You think you're a Ram fan? You ain't no Ram fan until you live through that ball game. And let me tell you what, friends and neighbors, would I tell you, I was a Ram fan, and they finished 9-7 that year. They sucked on wheels. Just to give you an example, the last game they played in the Coliseum was that season, and they lost to the Saints. The headline in the Times the next morning, "Arrivederci Aroma, Rams Stink Up Coliseum." Anyway, they went on to get to the Super Bowl that year after beating a Tampa Bay team 9-0 in the NFC championship game. Oh, my God. Now they're in the Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who've won three of them. Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, you know the names, you know the cast. There they were, playing in the Super Bowl, and after three quarters, they lead 19-17. Where was I? Well, I was sitting with a group of friends of mine and I, me and some schoolhood chums. You know, guys, before we were married, we had a barbecue. There's a little wild turkey being passed around, a little Jack Daniels, what's it to you? And maybe something else. Maybe we were passing something else. Whose business is it but mine? In any event, we sat there, and I'm sure it wasn't the weed, I mean the beer. We were stunned because after three quarters, Ferragamo was throwing strikes. The Rams were all over the Steelers like a bad stink. The Steelers didn't know whether to flip or fall in it. However, the final quarter, the Steeler magic, as Terry Bradshaw hits Stallworth right over the fingertips of Nolan Cromwell for the go-ahead score, Rams lose, Steelers win, and I vomited on someone's lawn. 1981, the first of many exciting Raider Super Bowl wins. Not really. They had won in the 70s, but this one was a game where I actually rooted for the Raiders because they were playing the Philadelphia Eagles, and for some reason, I took the Raiders in a bet. Raiders played in the Superdome that year. It was the year that the hostages came back from Iran. I was sitting at my friend Carm's house. He was married that time to a chick named Pam. We were all sitting around shooting cards. It became a tradition through the 80s that we would have our poker game on Super Bowl Sunday. And I remember the Raiders handled the Eagles pretty well in that ball game. And there was a big yellow ribbon tied around the Superdome. And I believe I was drinking, Corona just came out that year. 1982, we were back over at Carm's house for the annual poker game. And by that time, he had a couple of dogs. I forget their names, but they were like Afghans or something. Anyway, they were hanging around. We were shooting cards. And that was the year that the Bengals and the 49ers played. It was the first Super Bowl for both teams. And that was the first Super Bowl for Joe Montana as the 49ers took the Bengals apart, handed them their rear end and said, thank you very much, and stuck a flower in it. 1982. So now 1983, I'm sitting on the floor at Don and Pam's house. This is Don and Pam, my good buddy Don. And we're watching the Washington Redskins. Oh, yeah, the Swede was there, too. And we're watching the Redskins and the Dolphins. The Redskins beat the Dolphins, and we're sitting there watching as John Riggins runs over top of Don McNeil. Redskins win, Dolphins suck. That was the last year, by the way, that David Wooden wore a Dolphin uniform. All right. 1984, Miami. Yes, Miami returns to the Super Bowl. And that year, I was over at Mike and Boki's house. Mike's my good buddy. Boki's his Korean wife. Well, she's American, but the name's... You can understand you'd be confused. Lloyd would probably be confused. He'd probably shoot her before he said hello to her. In any event, we're over at Mike and Boki's house and their daughter, Suki. I'm serious. Mike, Boki, and Suki. And we're watching as San Francisco defeats the Miami Dolphins. And I took the Dolphins in a pretty serious bet that year. And I was really disgusted, especially with Kim Bocamper. Sorry, Kim, but when you bat the ball up in the air, try and catch it. Oh, my God. 1985... Oh, no, 1984. What? Did I say 84? Oh, 1985. Yes, 1985 was the year. You got it. The Chicago Bears play the New England Patriots. The first Super Bowl for the New England Patriots, and I believe the very first Super Bowl for the Bears. The Bears routed the Patriots, but there was one really cool hit on McMahon where he went upside down. I forget the guy that did it. We were over at Don and Pam's house again for that one, and there was a baby shower. And my buddy Don and I used to do these stand-up acts and baby showers. We put on a big pair of diapers and a sports jacket, and we had to do that after the game was over. So by the time the baby shower rolled around, we're hammered. And I forget, what game was that? It was the Bears and the Pats. And the Bears kicked their ass. And I went to get some beer at the store. And I was, I guess I was pretty studly in those days because some old lady, she goes outside and I could overhear her telling her granddaughter, there was a very handsome man in the store. And then she saw me walking by and hearing her and she got all, upset. And I said to the granddaughter, would you mind if I, use her for a couple of hours? Phil Hendry Show will be right back.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I missed one of the Super Bowls, by the way, the 1984 Super Bowl. That was the Raiders and the Redskins. And that was an abomination. We were back in Mike and Boki's house. By that time, I was dating this chick who had a kid. And it was kind of messed up. I told her to leave her kid home, and she didn't. So I had to bring her and the kid. It sucked. Anyway, the Redskins got their rear ends handed to them. I'll never forget when Joe Theismann threw that little flare pass that was picked off by the Raiders. That Squirek dude, Jack Squirek, runs it in for a touchdown. Gibbs looked like he was going to vomit up 6 years worth of bad lunches. It was something else. Then came 85. That's when the 49ers beat the Dolphins and Bocamper batted the ball in the air. Now we come to 86. That's the Bears and the Pats. And then we get to 87. New York Giants, Denver Broncos, and the beginning of the Broncos smelling it up for a long time. Elway was in the Super Bowl that year, but it wasn't the same Bronco team that Shanahan took over. New York Giants win. Next year, it was the Washington Redskins, I think, and the Denver Broncos. Washington Redskins with the great Doug Williams there pitching in. And then came the next year, which I think was 1989. It was the San Francisco 49ers. 1-800-449-8686.
Oh, my God, it really sucked. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.